audio timestamp for the next meeting in Hall 2C is locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. It's the final report scheduled for 10:30 a.m. local time through to 11 a.m. local time.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Before we commence with the presentation from Michele Nalon, I think it's useful for us to do a quick round table for everyone. It'll serve as a roll call and an introduction to everyone in the room. So if I could start down on my left with Wolfgang, and if we could just work our way around the table and give councillors an opportunity to just introduce name and affiliation, and we'll do a quick roll call by that method. So fire away from Wolfgang, please.
My name is Wolfgang Kleinwächter. I'm from the University of Aarhus, and I'm a member of the non-commercial stakeholder group.
Oh, sorry. My name is Magali Pazello. I am from the non-commercial stakeholder group.
Oh, okay. David Cake, councillor for the non-commercial stakeholder group. Is that it? From Australia.
Just joining the Antipodean segment of the council, Joy Liddycote from the non-commercial stakeholder group.
My name is Marie-Laure Lemineur, filling in for Wendy Seltzer, and I'm with the NPOC non-commercial stakeholder group. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Volker Greimann. I'm with the registrar stakeholder group.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wolf. I am the nominating committee appointee.
My name is John Berard. I'm a public relations consultant based in San Francisco, California, and I'm a counselor from the business constituency.
Peter Rimford from Sweden and IPC, Intellectual Property Constituency.
Brian Winterfeld, North America, also Intellectual Property Constituency.
Wolf Ulrich Noben, Germany, with the ISPCP.
Jonathan Robinson from United Kingdom. I'm a council rep from the Registry Stakeholder Group and elected chair of the council.
Mason Cole, North American representative for the Registrar Stakeholder Group and vice chair.
Marika Konings, Senior Policy Director and GNSO Team Leader, based in ICANN office in Brussels.
Michele Nalon, not a GNSO Councillor, Chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group, and various other things.
Holly Raish, I'm actually on the ALAC, but I am Chair of the Policy and Implementation Drafting Team, so I'm sort of one of you.
Sort of. Evan Leibovich, sitting in for Alan Greenberg, ALAC liaison to the GNSO from Canada.
Mary Wong, newest member of the ICANN policy staff.
I know that's a great thing to hear. Jeff Newman, I'm the North American representative of the Registry Stakeholder Group on the GNSO Council.
Hi, I'm Yoav Keren. I'm the CEO of Domain.net, a registrar in Israel, and I represent the registrars group.
Hi, Zaid Jamil, attorney from Pakistan, domain name dispute resolution center, a counselor for the business constituency.
Lanre Ajayi from Nigeria, NAMCOM appointee.
Oswaldo Novoa from Uruguay, Internet Service Providers and Connectivity Providers Constituency.
Elisa Cooper, I'm Chair of the BC, and I am also with Mark Monitor.
Steve DelBianco with NetChoice, and I'm Vice Chair for Policy Coordination in the Business Constituency.
Barry Cobb, assisting with the GNSO Policy Team.
Lars Hoffman, ICANN Policy Staff.
Brian Peck, ICANN Policy Staff.
Thanks all. Let's move on then with the first formal or structured session, locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, introduced and presented to us by Michele Nalon.
Thanks. Alan Greenberg, my vice chair or co-chair or whatever way you want to look at it, isn't here as he's doing the ATRT, but I'm sure he's here in spirit. Oh, look, that would be Evan. Good morning, everybody. I'm just going to go through the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, which is a terrible mouthful, which we reduced down to UDRP lock, since we didn't want to waste 10 minutes at the beginning of every call just actually giving the title of the working group. So as of 5th of July 2013, we've submitted our final report. Based on feedback from the community, we made two substantive changes to our recommendations. The working group has reached full consensus on our recommendations, and this is intended to clarify and standardize the process for locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. So our recommendations are as follows. Definition of lock: preventing any changes of registrar and registrant without impairing resolution or preventing renewal. And in simple terms, the domain isn't going to drop off the face of the internet. You just can't change the registrar or the registrant. Removing obligation for complainant to notify the respondent at the time of filing, but adding automatic extension of 4 days to response time upon request by respondent. Recommendation 4, registrar not allowed to contact registrant until lock has been applied. The idea being here that just to prevent the cyber flight concept. Recommendation number 5, requiring registrar to apply lock within 2 business days following request for verification. 6, best practice recommendation for registrars and UDRP providers, to provide means to identify opening hours, days, in other words, such as, business days. Number 7, requirement for registrar to confirm lock and verify information in response to verification request from UDRP provider. Number 8, if compliant, UDRP provider shall notify parties of commencement no later than 3 business days. Note, we've changed this from calendar days. And number 10, if complaint remains non-compliant, registrar shall, within 1 business day of receipt of withdrawal notice, remove the lock. Number 11, UDRP provider notifies registrant that any updates to contact information also need to be communicated by the registrant to the UDRP provider. 12, notification also includes information that any changes as a result of lifting of privacy proxy services after the lock has been applied need to be reviewed by the UDRP panel directly. Noting here that this will be further reviewed as part of the privacy proxy accreditation program, which is being discussed as part of the RAA. 13, registrar must communicate within 3 business days to all parties the date for implementation of the decision. Implement immediately after 10 business days if complainant has prevailed, after 15 business days if respondent prevails. 14, in case of suspension to agree on settlement, UDRP provider informs the registrar of suspension, including expected duration. If settlement is reached, lock needs to be removed within 2 business days. 15, define process for settlement, which includes the UDRP providing, confirming to the registrar the settlement reached. 16, development of educational and information materials to assist in implementation of recommendations. And number 17, creation of an implementation review team to assist ICANN staff in the development of the implementation plan. And if you have any questions, please throw them at me politely.
Yeah.
And Marika's telling me to tell you all, of course, that as this is a very condensed version, there is a full report, of course, and there's also other stuff within the slide deck as well about, the background and various other things.
Thanks, Michaela. A brief comment just to remind everyone that you have responded well, thank you, to what we asked for coming out of Beijing. That was that there were succinct presentations backed up by supporting material such that we could either take that as read and or engage with the detail as and if appropriate, but that we didn't go through all of the fine detail. So really, really appreciate that what you've done there, but also highlighting that there is more available. Any comments, questions, or input? Yoav.
If you can go back to the recommendation 12, just a clarification. Is it 12? Yeah. What is need to be reviewed by the UDRP panel directly? So what happens? Can the registrar lift the proxy? Should they lift the proxy? Do they need to get an approval from the UDRP panel? What's the meaning of this recommendation?
The wording here is notification also includes information. It's if you've lifted it, if there's changes, it's not a discussion of whether you should lift or not lift.
Okay.
So if on lifting there's a change, then you're notifying.
But it says need to be reviewed. So what is the meaning of reviewed?
That's up for the UDRP panel.
Okay.
Well, maybe Rika can clarify, speak more clearly than I can.
So maybe to add, so this is not a change or anything from what is currently there, but it's basically just trying to clarify that if indeed there a lifting happens after the lock has been applied and a registrar or the privacy proxy service goes to the UDRP panel and says, hey, it's not me or it's not my proxy service that's the registrant, but this is the real registrant, can you please change it? We're saying, well, that's actually under the current UDRP rules, it's up to the panel to decide. And we've heard from some of the UDRP providers that in certain cases they may change it, but in certain cases they will list both parties then as the respondent, and in some cases they'll just leave the original registrant as listed in who is as the respondent. So this is just basically clarifying what's existing process. It's not recommending any change, but just making sure that everyone's clear on that if that happens, they need to tell the UDRP panel, and they may decide whether to include or change the respondent, but it's not something that the registrar or UDRP provider itself would do.
Okay, thanks, Michele. This is good stuff. And I think we should move forward with these pretty quickly, and I don't want to stand in the way of that. My question more has to do with the fact that, and I think I raised this in Beijing, which is more on the URS, which I know was not part of your scope. But I do want to address it with the council, is that some of these, not all of them, but some of these could equally apply to the URS that's going to come into play very soon, although it's the registry that gets some of the notifications. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to move forward with all this, and I don't want to slow that down, but I also want someone to look at these issues as it relates to the URS fairly quickly before we actually get URS cases so that we can see, because it just makes sense to me, some of these recommendations, but they're not in the URS currently, and I think we could just have some of the difficulties or issues that have arisen with UDRP now come up in the URS when we have potential solutions. So I'd like to hear maybe by, later this week of how we can, as a council, get this work underway with the URS so that we can have some standardization in both of those dispute processes.
So the gentleman on the left-hand side at first, and then Landry. Please introduce yourself.
Yes, good morning. Philip Corwin of Virtual LLC, and speaking now on behalf of one of my clients, Internet Commerce Association. I want to, I forget which number it is, I want to thank the working group for the addition of the automatic right for a 4-day extension for the respondent if they ask for that.
2 and 9, Phil. 2 and 9. Recommendations 2 and 9.
2 and 9. And I appreciate that. That was a response to comments I both made in Beijing and filed on behalf of ICA. However, not wishing to seem ungrateful, I do want to state one last time for the record that we believe that the automatic extension should be for 7 days and not for 4 days. And let me explain why. In the UDRP, the complainant has weeks or months to prepare the complaint. They have all the time in the world. They determine the timing of the complaint. They can file it on Christmas Eve or at the beginning of August if it's against a European registrant, because they know folks will be on vacation. And the respondent has a very limited time to respond. And in surveying my member, the fact is that ever since the UDRP began, the respondent has received notice of it from the complainant at the time of filing. And the incidence, I think the working group found that the incidence of cyber flight was extremely small, I believe 1 or 2%, while about 30% of respondents do file a response in UDRP. So the number, the group of respondents that's affected by this effective reduction in response time is much larger than the incidence of cyber flight. In surveying my members, the information we got is that the average delay between the time the complaint is filed and the formal notice from the registrar runs from 1 to 2 weeks. So we suggested a 7-day extension as the average of that delay. So again, while appreciating the 4-day right of extension, I think really because of the effective reduction of response time for the respondent, which many of these respondents have to find counsel, figure out their arguments, all of that, that the number should be changed to 7. I don't think that additional 3 days would in any way prejudice the rights of the complainant, particularly in light of the fact that once the response is filed and then the complainant responds to that, there's a 1 to 2 month lag time before there's a decision from the UDRP provider. So it's not going to affect the timing of the decision. It's just going to give the respondent a more equitable restoration of their effective right to respond. So thank you very much for considering my comments on that.
So I have Landwe, and then would you then comment on the comments made at first?
I can take them one at a time, or I can do it at the end. I don't really mind.
Okay, at first Landwe, and then you have.
Okay, yes. Thank you very much. This is Landwe Ajayi, non-com appointee. Thank you, Michele, for the presentation. I know a lot of thought has gone into this recommendation, but I noticed that some timeline based on business days, like recommendation 13. And I want to observe that business days varies from countries to countries. Some have 5 working days, some 6 working days. And I guess that may cause some confusion. So don't you think it is appropriate to apply calendar days in all the recommendations?
Thanks, Landry. I'll speaking very quickly to that, we did discuss that at length, and the business days was exactly because of the discussions we had. I mean, one of the other recommendations we have, which is not binding but is more of a best practice, is recommendation number 6, where we're recommending that both registrars and UDRP providers publish, identify, or indicate their operating days and hours so that people will have an understanding as to when things are likely to happen. I mean, this entire thing around calendar days versus business days is something that runs through a lot of ICANN policy, and it's you know, if you say to me it has to be done on X number of calendar days, somebody else will point out there's a problem with that, whereas if I tell you, okay, these are my operating days and hours, and I will do something with the next work, X business days that we have, then it's slightly clearer. But I mean, it's a valid thing, with something we have discussed at length. Speaking to Mr. Corwin, hi Phil. We did weigh that, and we did discuss it at length. You know, the reality is that if the percentage of cases where there is a respondent is smaller than the sum total of cases. This is an automatic thing, but it does not preclude them from asking for a formal extension. So you still have that. This is just an automatic one. But the comment is noted. Thank you.
Yeah, one last thing. Actually, Jeff's comment brought to me. So just a question. Was there any consideration of doing the lock at the registry's level? You just said that some of the things in the URS are are going to the registry. So was it considered to maybe...
Yoav, that wouldn't make any sense.
What?
That wouldn't make any sense.
Why not?
Because the lock applies to the change of registrant, and for a thin registry, the registrant data isn't available at the registry level, so that wouldn't be, make any sense to do.
Only in the thin registry?
Yeah, but considering that the thin registry is common net and they account for the bulk of domain names registered.
So, well, to state otherwise, I mean, if we go forward with the thick, we have a thick registry PDP, we may choose to come back to that later on if that happens. But
I mean, we're talking about discussing the current reality. I mean, we have the idea that after the, 24 months after the first delegation or 36 months or whatever the hell it is, that there will be, 18, Jeff, that there will be an overall review of the UDRP, at which point, you know, maybe things will have moved from thick to thin and thin to thick and God only knows, or maybe there won't even be a who is. so, look, you know, there's a lot of things that could change.
Do we have more questions here on that? Because otherwise... I have a final question on that, not a final one. The one, what is the process right now? So after that, so you provided these recommendations, what are we going to do with that right now?
And Marika.
Yes, so this is Marika. So the final report has now been submitted in line with what we've done for some of the more recent PDP recommendations. We provided a draft motion for consideration, so to allow already for some discussion of the language that is in there, so that if there is a need to make changes or, you know, to the motion itself, we can actually do it before making the formal motion, also with the desire then that hopefully at the next meeting there's no need for a deferral, as, you know, hopefully people will have had enough time to review it. So it's basically on the agenda for the council on Wednesday to have a look at that motion, discuss the report, and then hopefully the council would be in a position to take a vote on it at the next meeting in September, provided that the recommendations in the report are adopted. It would then be put out for another round of public comment before the board will consider it. So that's basically the next steps in this process. And once or if the board approves it, then we move again in the implementation phase, and if the council agrees with the recommendation of having an implementation review team, that group would then be formed at that stage.
So you are saying that this draft motion is on the agenda of the council meeting next week, and it's in the document as well?
Yes, it's correct, but as said, it's not as part of the motions, because it wasn't formally made to allow for initial discussions and consideration, but it is added as an agenda item.
But it would be helpful if it's put on the list of the documents in advance, that we can have a view on that. Is that...
The motion was also circulated with the report to the council list.
Okay.
But we can also add it to the... I'll check with Glenn where it's currently posted, but I presume it's somewhere with the documents. But
yes,
it was also posted on the council mailing list.
Because it would be helpful for the stakeholder groups, you know, to have a look at this.
Yeah.
Jeff, please.
So just to clarify on that, it was not submitted in time to be considered at this meeting. Is that the rationale?
No, but I submitted it. It wasn't made by a council member. So basically, we could have asked a council member to make it, but in line with previous practice, and also because the final report was submitted relatively close to the meeting, we thought it would be wiser to actually have it as a draft motion on the table. But of course, if there's a desire and people want to, you know, go beyond the rules that currently exist to still consider it, that's an option. But I think in line with previous practice on PDP votes, we've said, okay, let's introduce it first as a draft motion and then for the next meeting have it as a formal motion.
Yeah, on that. So, and I don't want to be accused of going around process, so I'm not going to. But, this is one of the reasons why things take too long. I know we don't have an August meeting. So now the fact is we actually have the motion. We're not going to act on it this meeting, and we have to wait till September. I mean, that's, even just to call like a half-hour meeting, just to approve it and move it forward faster, I think is we should come up with other mechanisms to move some of these things faster when they aren't controversial. Maybe it is controversial. I mean, we had an interim report. The interim report didn't seem too – the initial report didn't seem too controversial. So it would surprise me now if there's huge gaps. Plus, I think in my observation of the group, it seemed to have very active participation from the intellectual property group, the commercial business users, registrars, and so it seemed like there was an user, the ALAC and non-commercial, so it seemed to me a good balance. So I'd be very surprised if there's and a little disappointed if there's extensive comments. That said, I don't want to go around it. We should have it, but perhaps we should consider a mechanism to move these a little bit quicker in light of the conversation we just had of how long things take. To me now, not having a meeting in August, and I don't know when in September our meeting is, but we have a pretty big gap of something that probably should go a lot sooner, and now we're delaying it several months.
This is Marika. Maybe something to discuss on when we consider the motions, because indeed, yes. If there is a view that this is not controversial and people are willing to move on it, you know, there's nothing for if there's unanimous agreement to move it as a formal motion, the council member can do so, and then no one objects to it being included in the agenda. As said, the reason why we've done it is in the past we've had experiences where indeed motions would come formally on the table, and then we had a lot of difficulties because some people wanted changes here and there, so we kind of had this practice of doing it this way. But I completely agree that if indeed there is, you know, full support for moving this forward quicker, because if we adopt it here, it means that we can already put it out for public now, comment now, prepare the council report, and move it much faster up to the board than it would otherwise be if we would have to wait to September. So I completely agree.
I see others raising their hands, but since we are going to run out of time here, so I would suggest that we take this point to the afternoon session when we talk about motions. Not that we talk about this motion, but we talk about the process of this motion, because I understand that there may be discussion necessary within the stakeholder groups about this motion. So if you could agree to that we take it to the afternoon in the session when we're talking about this motion, I would like to finish that session right now. Is that okay with you, John and Petter? Not better, but Petter. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes. Okay. Thanks very much. So thank you very much, Michaela and the team, for providing us this services report and the recommendations. the chair is left, so what shall I do? So, okay. Yes, you. Okay, please.
Mason Cole speaking, the vice chair of the council from the Contracted Parties House. Jonathan had to step away for a bit and asked that we handle the introduction here of Holly and her group here. She's to provide an update for the council on the charter drafting team for policy and implementation. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the recording. Yes.